Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with Chris and Chelsea, or Chelsea and Chris, the Florida famous Sunshine State Seekers.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
So this is actually an episode I've been excited about. So we are in Black History Month here in Florida, and Florida has a very rich Black history. So we're going to discuss two events and places, which is Fort Mosé and Prospect Bluff, which I don't think is as well known. And before we go any further, I just want to thank Dr. Michelle Duncan for suggesting this episode. It was something that I think we were all excited about.
Yeah, and anytime any of our listeners have something they'd want to hear about on the podcast, please reach out to us and let us know.
Sometimes we record multiple sessions at once, and I'd say we have a few today that are listener-suggested subjects. So we're going to talk about Fort Mosé first, because it happened earlier and is probably a little bit more well known. So this is a state park. It's in St. Augustine, Florida. And if I'm not mistaken, it was the first legally sanctioned Black settlement. At the time, you had England that had territories north of Florida, and you had Spain that had control of Florida. And there was a bit of tension there. And I wouldn't even say a bit. There was a lot of tension. So Spain decided that they were going to, if someone who was enslaved escaped south to Florida, if they swore allegiance to Spain, converted to Catholicism, and provided military service, then they would be a free citizen. The Underground Railroad initially went south. Now, I know we may talk about some differences in how England and Spain kind of govern slavery. I don't want to say one was better than the other, because slavery is inherently evil, no matter which way you look at it. I'm not saying this is good slavery or that is bad slavery. They both were wrong. Spain was willing to take people that were self-emancipating or fleeing slavery and grant them free citizens. And the first settlement was Fort Mosé, which was just north of St. Augustine of the Castillo de San Marco. And there it was like the first line of defense against the English if they went south. Who would fight harder for their freedom, or to defend their freedom, I should say, than those that had lost it at one point in time? Okay, so Fort Mosé originally started in 1738, and it basically ended in 1763 when the first Treaty of Paris was signed and Spain gave Florida over to England. So after that, there was no need for Fort Mosé at all. And most of the inhabitants left with them. You can actually visit Fort Mosé right now. Not the physical fort, but that is coming soon. It's just north of St. Augustine, I think right off A1A. And it has a nice visitor center. They've been doing concerts lately, jazz concerts, with some very notable artists to raise money for the fort. And I think it is high time that Fort Mosé was recognized for what it was.
Yeah, if you visit it right now, it is one of our current state parks. It's not as vast as some of the other ones you might think of, but as Ryan had stated, they're doing a lot more events and stuff now and planning future construction.
Yeah, I think they got.
They're going to build a replica of the fort, right?
Yes. So the original fort was off on one of the islands out in the marsh a little bit. So the one they're building is not on the exact site, which is good because you don't want to be building right on archaeologically sensitive area. The plans are, I think, to build it right there on the state park and the mainland.
But well, if you're building a replica anyway, I mean, if it's really close to where it was, it's representative.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. But to see it, I mean, I'm sure with Fort Christmas is probably not like exactly where that fort was. And so you're talking about it's high time that we have a representation of such a significant piece of history here when we've got, Fort Christmas has been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, a lot of those buildings at Fort Christmas were moved there, most of them.
Yeah, but the fort itself is a replica. Yeah. And I think it's really neat to kind of see that, because then you're like seeing, even though it's not the original structure, it's a representation of the
time. It's a window into history.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one that is under-celebrated in Florida. And to your point, Chris, I can think of three seminal war era forts that have been reconstructed, and this one hasn't been yet.
Right.
But that's coming soon, and that's absolutely great. But they do, I believe, like once or twice a month, they have militia firings, you know, like a demonstration. The visitor center is awesome. So if you really want a glimpse into that area of history, it is pretty cool. There was a gentleman named Francisco Menendez, if I'm not mistaken, who was the first military leader of Fort Mosay. So he had fled slavery south, and he was a notable warrior. He was fought very well, and he first led the militia at Fort Mosay. So the English ended up attacking Fort Mosay, and it was a pretty large force. They knew they were coming, so they basically said, everybody at Fort Mosay, evacuate, come to Castillo de San Marco, and let's wait it out a little bit. So the British came in, occupied Fort Mosay, and then a few days later, there was a counterattack. So the militia, the Spaniards, and some Native Americans all attacked the British. It was known as the Battle of Bloody Mosay, and a lot of English soldiers were killed. And so after that, the fort was not in great shape. So everyone basically stayed in St. Augustine, and Fort Mosay was rebuilt. Francisco Menendez, he went out, and he was part of the Corsairs. So think maybe privateers. They were basically raiding ships with Spain's blessing of the enemies of Spain, and he gets captured by the English. He admits to what he did. Hey, I was at Fort Mosay, and you know, we attacked and we won. And they did not like that, so they tortured him pretty bad. I think they gave him 200 lashings, and I think they brined him, which is salt and vinegar, poured him on his wounds, very bad. And then, supposedly, he was sold back into slavery around the Bahamas, and somehow he makes his way back to Fort Mosay. It's not sure that if he escaped or if Spain paid for his freedom. That's kind of
lost in history a bit.
Mm-hmm. So he comes back and he leads Fort Mosay again. So it was really impressive. The British hated Fort Mosay because it was a beacon of freedom. People, this word spread. They knew that if they fled south to St. Augustine, that there was a chance for freedom. And I think just under 300 people that were formerly enslaved or self-emancipated, you know, gained their freedom there at Fort Mosay.
So what happened to the fort? Was it just lost in time a little bit? Just the elements, the one that was there previously?
The first one was
is
destroyed. The second one that was built. So at the first Treaty of Paris, Spain seceded Florida or gave Florida to England. And then Fort Mosay was abandoned because all the subjects of Spain decided, hey, we're going to go to Havana, for example, and we're going to take off. So it's basically evacuated and then lost to history. But I think it's very exciting that they're about to rebuild it.
Yeah, absolutely. What you were describing, some of the events they do there, they do in other areas there too. We saw, where was it, in Fort Matanzas, where they also were shooting off the, what kind of guns are those called? You had said it, now I can't remember.
What, cannons, artillery?
The musket rifles.
The musket, yeah.
So if you're in the area at all and want to see something like that, Fort Mosay is one place you can do that.
They have Fort Mosay, and then almost walking distance, if you're really a walker, you have...
Well, we are hikers, so you know.
Yeah. You have the Castillo de San Marco, which is like almost in downtown St. Augustine, and then to the south, what is that, Fort Matanzas?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So I've driven by it many a times. I have not actually took a boat out there to it. So I have seen it. It's beautiful.
I'd say it's one of my favorite little gems.
It's a free ferry that takes you out.
A little bit of history you can see for no cost.
And that's where we saw them shooting the muskets.
Yeah, that is
in the parking lot there.
Oh wow!
So if you go there when they're doing that, they have got a schedule, and there's so many times that we've been exploring.
And just are at the right place at the right time.
They're in like 5 minutes, we're going to be doing a demonstration of these old muskets.
And I could be wrong, but I believe that trip, the ferry was down because of damage from one of the hurricanes.
Oh, really?
Hurricane Irma? Damage?
I can't remember. I think it was Irma. Yeah. So, but it's opened back up again. But anyways, back to the topic.
Oh, no. That's all rich history that's like kind of interwoven. But yeah, Fort Mosay is definitely a great place to check out because it does have a very rich history and relevant one. And if you are in the area, they do have an excellent jazz series. Some of the names I was pretty impressed with, like the Preservation Hall. They're actually, I think they're later this month. So now we're going to go into the Panhandle. It's a very tragic story, which is we're going to talk about Prospect Bluff. That has many, I guess, different names. They had, there were some forts there. One was Fort Gadsden. That was a United States fort. One they called the Negro Fort, which was the fort that was abandoned by the British in the War of 1812 and was inhabited by a mixture of people that were fleeing slavery, free blacks, and Native Americans. This was probably about 80 years later. So you have the War of 1812. So I believe on Prospect Bluff, so this is in Apalachicola National Forest. And if you're paddling upriver or taking a boat upriver, it's almost 20 miles exactly from Apalachicola, the city or the town. This fort was on a bluff. And if you've ever been to the Apalachicola River, it has some amazingly high bluffs. I know we hiked at Torreya State Park last year, and there was a Civil War era fort there that was strategically right. placed.
I was going to say, actually, we didn't take you on this, but within a short distance of Torreya is the Appalachia Bluffs hiking trail, which is also known as Garden of Eden Trail. And I say that's a good one for people to check out in the area because it's kind of like a miniature compact version of Torreya mm-hmm. where maybe some people aren't comfortable taking that big. It's a big hike.
Yeah.
So how long is that hike? About 5 miles?
No, less. Like 3 mile round trip.
Yeah. And it's a condensed version of the Torreya State Park. So if you're in the area, it's a good one to check out to, just to get a bit of unique to Florida topography.
Geographically, it's the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of elevation changes. And once you get on the Torreya Challenge, it's a loop and you're stuck on it. There's no way just to get off unless you backtrack or slog ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It's dedicated. So there's a shorter trail that's one that has a decent advantage. But if you're on that bluff, so the Apalachicola River, you had an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
At the Torreya State Park, they had there was a Civil War battery there that was kind of monitoring the river. When you get down to Prospect Bluff, which is, like I said, 20 miles north of Apalachicola by the river, and it's a pretty remote park. If you want to visit, I would definitely check out the website because it's not open, I would say, traditional hours.
We checked earlier and it was open weekdays.
Yeah.
Weird hours, like you said.
The first time I tried to go to it, it was closed because of hurricane damage. Then after that, it was opened, you know, when guided by a ranger at some point.
It's an extremely rural area.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing out there. It's right on the, so the whole, both sides, the Apalachicola River there are pretty rural, but like right smack in the middle of the western side of Apalachicola National Forest, there is a campsite just north of there. I stayed at years ago, and it's a Wright Lake campground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably about maybe less than two to five miles
okay.
from there. So if someone wanted to explore the area, you could stay in camp there.
Yeah, that's good to know because it is a remote area. Apalachicola National Forest and say like Tate's Hill, which is nearby. Both of them are have for some great hiking and unique features of Florida.
Another thing to note that if you are in this area with your planning is that is where the time zones change.
Oh my gosh.
So you want to make sure when like reading signage and it says the hours of a place that you're in the right time zone. If you have your cell phone, the time will change back and forth on its own. So a lot of times you can go in it manually and make it to where it doesn't do that because it can be kind of a pain. And I'm starting to realize how many people in Florida, when I talk to people I know, don't even realize we have more than one time zone.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. I just want to bring that up so people know we do have more than one and that's where it changes.
For the most part, it's the Apalachicola River.
Yes.
So right. If you're on the eastern side of the Apalachicola River, you're in Eastern time zone.
Mm-hmm.
But if your cell phone, if you're right there at that, say that Wright Lake campground or Prospect Bluff area, your cell phone will pick up
smartwatches too.
Yeah. It'll pick up the towers on the western side of the Apalachicola River. And then your phone's going to say, oh, it's going to flip back and forth. It's really kind of like a twilight zone.
Yeah.
It's weird how it's like that. I think one odd thing with that is the town of Apalachicola is Eastern time zone.
Mm-hmm.
It could be off there.
Interesting.
Even though it's on the western side.
Apalachicola is this weird ribbon that, I wouldn't say weird ribbon, but it's a ribbon that just, it's not straight as it goes through the panhandle. Mm-hmm. And that time zone does fluctuate with it. I know when we were at Torreya State Park, which is right along the river, I could not trust my cell phone.
No.
Luckily, I wear an analog watch. And so I just go by that.
We do the corny thing with the kids when we go across that long bridge. You guys ready to time travel?
To go to Prospect Bluff, I would say that it's pretty deliberate because there's nothing around it that I'm aware of that where you can just kind of pass by and like, oh, here it is. It's beautiful as it overlooks the river, but it's a very somber area as well. In the early 1800s, the United States has the territory north of Spanish Florida, and Spain has Florida. It was the War of 1812. The British want to get a foothold, and they want to, you know, take Mobile Bay. So they have this fort right there on the Apalachicola River, and they have supplies, but they don't have a lot of people. So they do a similar call that, hey, if you want to come over, we will train you to fight. You provide military service, and you're free. That was also a beacon. And the British did train them. They made, 300 Royal Marines. And at the end of War of 1812, they were lost at Battle of Mobile Bay. They fled Pensacola, and they're leaving this fort. So they said, anybody who wants to come along with us, let's go. I think the majority of people left, but there were still a group of Native Americans, free blacks, and then people fled slavery still at the fort. And the United States did not like that because it was almost an invitation for those that were fleeing slavery. Because think about it, if you're even close to the fort, one thing you always had to worry about was like bounty hunters or people that were trying to kidnap people that fled slavery and then take them back for a bounty. That was always a risk. But if you had a fort that was kind of guarding you, that was something that was definitely attractive. Mm-hmm. So in this fort, there were trained soldiers. They definitely had gunpowder. They had cannons, muskets, artillery pieces, and everything. So the United States, so this is a problem. So if you're familiar with not a lot of town names or fort names in Florida. You had Andrew Jackson, who saw it was a problem. So, you know, he was our, seventh president. So that was one thing. Then you had Gaines, and then another officer was Clinch. And we got Fort Clinch, mm-hmm. and then Gaines of Gainesville. I think Gaines fought in the Seminole War as well. They decide this is a problem. So they were going to build a base, I think, on Lake Seminole, and they're basically taking supplies up the Apalachicola River, and they have some forces with them, two gunboats, and I believe possibly enough for some land forces. They come across some Native Americans that may have been Creek, and they were basically going to raid the fort and then try and take people back up north. They had fled slavery. So they joined forces with them. It was a seven-day land battle outside the fort. And then the gunboats came and they were fired upon, and they returned fire and got a very lucky shot. So they fired back. They used what's called a hot shot. So if you're ever at Castillo de San Marco and you go between like the fort and the river, they do have this setup where they showed where these cannonballs were heated in a furnace. And the thing they wanted to do was ignite things, wood, but most importantly, powder magazines. So one account said that this cannonball hot shot ricocheted off of a longleaf pine and into the powder magazine of the fort. Now you have all this munitions and they blow up at once, kind of like the USS Arizona did during the attack of Pearl Harbor. The entire fort blows up. 290 people are killed. One account says that they could hear the explosion as far away as Pensacola and then, you know, a good chunk of the state away. Everyone else is either flees or is captured. There was a gentleman named Garcon who was kind of in charge of the fort. He was wounded and interrogated and I believe executed. One thing that he did is when they demanded his surrender, he hoisted the British ensign and a red flag. And the red flag was basically no quarter will be asked or taken. So it's like fighting to the death. And unfortunately, that's what happened. The remains of those that died at that fort are buried at the site. I don't believe it is well known exactly where they are, but they are buried there. Soon afterwards, there was another fort, Fort Gadsden, built in that area as well. And that stayed there until Florida became a U.S. territory. There are a lot of documents that tell about the battle, but they're all written from the American perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, that there was an act of aggression from the fort and we returned fire. It was really a lucky shot. They tried to replicate that shot a couple years later. And even not even in combat conditions, under regular conditions, they just couldn't do it. There's a lot of interpretive signs. Now there is no fort. You mm-hmm. can still see some of the earthworks, a cemetery from when Fort Gadsden was there. And they've done some archaeological digs. They did one in the 50s and 60s, really looking for Fort Gadsden. They weren't even looking for the fort previous to that, but they found some different implements that really were of British origin, and that couldn't be ignored. 2000 teens, I should say, they were doing some ground penetrating radar and some other methods to try and find where the inhabitants of the fort were buried. I believe that exact place is still unknown.
Probably has a lot to do with Florida's just environment, with the humidity and everything. But like a fort that was built 200 years ago out of wood, there's just nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing remains. And then I guess just going on a tangent here, just about how interesting that is. Like across the Econ, close to where we live, they have these pilings from the Flagler Railroad.
Yeah.
And they're still there. But I understand that they were like dipped in this caustic, crazy stuff that you would never legally be able to
put things in.
And it's like, how is that still there from 100 years
and
ago?
And like it floods constantly too. So you would imagine.
Yeah.
But we can't find remnants of things from like 60 years ago.
Yeah.
I think they found some wooden remains that were buried.
So
I think buried may help.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
At like Torrey State Park, I guess they were unearthing some of the buried Confederate earthen embankments that had that were shored up with wood. They found some wood there. But you're right. If it's left outside, termites and moisture and
heat. The heat. Yeah.
Just breaks it down.
It's kind of surprising me because I went out west and I stopped by an old ghost town. You know, there were some buildings. They're mostly stone, but they had wood on them. You know, they were from a long time ago and the wood still.
Yeah. If you got those dry conditions, things just last a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, like say we actually just had a park staff member that was at Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. And because of the volcanic activity there, a lot of the wood is petrified. So it's just weird how different environmental elements will preserve
fossilized redwood.
Yeah.
And the first thing that came to my mind was, and I'm not even super familiar with the area out there. Sorry, this is the Florida Madcast podcast, and this isn't Florida, but from what I know, even being, you know, born and raised in Florida, is that the redwoods aren't really even anywhere near Yellowstone.
Right.
And I asked her, like, she's like, oh yeah, probably 300 plus miles away, if not more.
Mm-hmm. And she said it was due to the volcanic activity that they don't grow there anymore, but it's because of that activity that the wood that was there is preserved.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of ghost towns, we should do an episode on ghost towns, because I was just came to mind too with the Suwannee River State Park has two ghost towns, Ellaville and the town of Columbus.
Yeah.
And there's a place called Ethel in Rock Springs Run State Reserve, where all that's left are these little cemeteries and like everything wooden, every evidence of this train station town. It's just the woods have completely taken over, and it's just wild to think that just 150 years ago, there was like a bustling city there.
Yeah. Actually, where we're at right now recording at my house, this is a ghost town. I mean, there's nothing but a church.
Your house?
Sharon.
Yeah, Sharon, Florida. And today, oddly enough, we were hiking through a state forest trying to find basically where the railroad went, because there was a road that cut through there. Yeah, Florida is a very dynamic environment, and sometimes it just swallows up, unfortunately. It does not leave a lot of evidence, because there was wood was plentiful at the time, and they cut it down. They used it as a resource, and it just doesn't last that long, unfortunately, in Florida. But
we're fortunate we had good record keepers for stuff like this, and being able to like reconstruct Fort Mosey.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's not even any, obviously, any pictures, you know, that, but they know what it looked like in order to reconstruct it.
Yeah, the Spanish had pretty good records. And after the battle at Prospect Bluff, there was definitely some records that were kept, you know, war reports and stuff like that. They're able to be read today. Me personally, I think they have some very American elements. What is more American than fighting for your freedom, right? And that is what both of the inhabitants of these forts did. Unfortunately, the one on Prospect Bluff met with tragedy. Fort Mosey as well. It was one where people that were escaping slavery had a place to go, and it was a beacon of freedom. And I think that is something that resonates very well in our national history. So I'm glad that Fort Mosey is finally getting that recognition that it, I think, is long overdue. I would like to see something similar for Prospect Bluff. Now, Prospect Bluff has a mass graveyard somewhere in that area, so it's very sacred, and so there may not be something of that development going on there, but they do have a lot of very good interpretive signage.
It's all protected in a national forest too.
Yeah, that's actually a good thing. We don't have to worry about a developer putting up a subdivision around it.
It's a big chunk of land too.
So I know I've talked the lion's share of the discussion. It was something that I've been paying attention to because I'm very passionate
about. I've just
about.
Been sitting here wide-eyed, soaking it all in.
Yeah, we're learning
it's
on this
very
one.
Fascinating.
But do we have anything else before we close the episode?
No, just open your history books. Sometimes you have to seek out the real truth of things that happened because a lot of it is colonized or whitewashed. The real history sometimes isn't pretty, but it's interesting. Learning from the past helps us. In
yes.
future.
And I'd highly recommend checking out Fort Mosey, which is if you're in the St. Augustine area or the First Coast area, it's a pretty easy stop. And there's a lot of good information. Probably one of the best times to go because with them about to construct the fort, there's just a lot of energy there. I've been paying attention and it's just a lot going on. Now, Prospect Bluff, that is not as notable. And if you want to visit and get the full experience, I would check the website or maybe call the Forest Service to that area to get basically when that fort is accessible.
Especially because that's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And the first time I drove to it, I just expected it to be open and it was closed. And I was very disappointed because I
had the
gone
same
a
situation.
Long way out of my way to get there.
I went there this last time, like in October or something like mm-hmm. that. And Ryan, we're just talking about that. I drove all the way up from St. George Island, which it's in the area, but it was like an hour drive. And then down the really long dirt road, get to the end and it said closed. Mm. I was like, okay, well, just make sure before you go out there, find out when it's open.
Yeah, exactly. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.